welcome to episode one of Philosophy of X here on the Aspect Network. I'm your host, Alex Batts, and I'll be your guide as we take a journey to examine the world of X-Men through philosophy. For the first episode, I wanted to start out with a bang by tackling the most popular character in the X-Men world, Wolverine. There are a lot of different philosophical areas that could be paired with Wolverine, but as you can tell by the title, I want to explore how the character embodies some key ideals from existentialist philosophy. But before we get into all the juicy philosophy talk, let's dive into who exactly Wolverine is. Wolverine, also known as Logan, but born James Howlett, is one of the most iconic Marvel characters and far and away the most popular X-Men character. He was born to a wealthy Canadian family at the end of the 19th century, and through tragedy was forced to abandon his family and adopted the name Logan, wandering through the world as a lone wolf. Logan was born with an enhanced healing factor, bestial abilities, and bone claws that extend from each hand. His healing factor results in an exceptionally long life, one which for Logan has been filled with blood, war, and betrayal. He became the unwilling subject of the infamous Weapon X program, which resulted in his bones being coated in the indestructible metal adamantium, giving him his iconic silver claws. Wolverine was first introduced to readers in the pages of Incredible Hulk as an adversary for the hulking green guy, but grew in popularity after joining the second Genesis team of X-Men in Giant Size X-Men number 1. Logan was a historically challenging addition to the X-Men roster, often butting heads with the rest of the team, and Cyclops in particular. Through the years, though, the X-Men gained Wolverine's respect, and he became a key staple of the roster. As his popularity grew, he eventually spun off into his own mini and later ongoing series. I don't want to get too into the specifics about his publication history and stories, because frankly, there is a lot there. But the main takeaways that are relevant for our conversation today are his emphasis on personal choice, his battle with his past, his moral ambiguity, and his recurring feelings of isolation. Wolverine's past was mysterious for a solid chunk of the beginning of his publication history. It wasn't until the 90s that readers were clued into the fact that he was, in fact, a lot older than he appeared. Throughout the 90s, many of the now classic features of his character were established. His trials in the Weapon X program, and the unreliable nature of his memories being two of them. Logan's history is one filled with intense trauma and loss. Often, Logan will find brief solace in love, have a child, and then his love and child are usually swept away in a brutal murder. This then leads Logan to retreat back into isolation. It's a cycle that repeats throughout much of his history. And despite this intense loss and his frequent manipulation at the hands of others, Logan consistently fights to make his own choices determining the future of his life. His journey is also marked by a constant battle to find his true inner self. He's always at odds with what seems to be his animalistic, violent nature, a nature that others are quick to exploit in him. This exploitation often leads to great moral ambiguity in his character. He's done some pretty horrific things throughout his life. He's been a soldier, a mercenary, assassin, outlaw, spy, samurai, and more, and all of those paths are filled with untold violence. All of these factors often lead to him feeling isolated from his fellow mutants. Though he shares a community with them in many ways, his extended life and fraught past lead him to feel at odds with those who surround him. This often pushes him towards isolationist tendencies, either viewing himself as unworthy of those around him, or seeking to protect those he loves by keeping himself away. With all of that said, Wolverine does often find his direction through the desire for self-improvement and his love of both his found and biological family. His biological family is a bit of a mess to fully unpack, but at this point he does have a couple of children, most famously Laura Kinney, also known as X-23 or Wolverine herself, whom he will defend with his life. It's these things that ground him and keep him going. So, now that we have a basic grasp on Wolverine and some of the core underpinnings of his character, when we get back, we'll be diving headfirst into existentialism. Hey, Aspect listener, my name is Alex.
And I'm Kate. Enjoying this show on the Aspect Network?
Then check out Bending the Narrative.
We are your one-stop shop for everything in the world of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series with a particular focus on the characters and narrative threads that tie the series together.
In addition to discussing the original series, we also dive into other stories in the world of Avatar, like Legend of Korra, the live-action Netflix series, the books, the comics, and more.
Join us as we travel the globe with Team Avatar and discuss one of the greatest animated series of all time on Bending the Narrative here on the Aspect Network.
Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Let's get existential. Existentialism is something that I feel most people have a tertiary understanding of. I'm having an existential crisis is something that gets thrown around constantly in modern vernacular. Typically, it's used when someone is confronted with something that challenges their worldview or notions about their own existence. I feel that most people don't look too much deeper into it than that surface understanding, though. We're familiar with existential thought, but we don't really examine it. Existentialism, at its core, is a form of philosophical inquiry that explores the issue of human existence. It's important to hammer home the emphasis on that word, issue. Viewing existence as an issue or problem is fundamental to existentialist thought. That's not to say that all existentialist thinkers view existence as an outright negative, just that existence itself does present some very real problems to the human experience. Before we get further, I want to throw out some names of key existentialist philosophers. That way you can read or listen to more about them if this is something you find particularly compelling. Existentialism's roots are associated with several philosophers from the 19th century, including Soren Kierkegaard and Friedrich Nietzsche, and several from the 20th century, including Jean-Paul Sartre, Albert Camus, Martin Heidegger, and Simone de Beauvoir. I will be referencing Sartre and Camus in particular as we move forward. So, back to the problem of the human experience. Many of you might have noticed that life doesn't come baked in with any inherent meaning. This is the core problem of existentialist philosophy. Well, Camus thinks that there's a different core question, but we'll get there. The problem of finding meaning in an existence where meaning can't inherently be found is what prompts the various outlooks of existential philosophers. Sartre, in his 1946 lecture, Existentialism is a Humanism, argues that the fundamental doctrine that all existentialists have in common is the idea that, quote, existence precedes essence. Now, you might be asking, what does that mean? Thankfully, I'm here to unpack just that. An easier way to break this down is to give an example of the counterpoint for Sartre's point. The counterpoint to existence precedes essence is essence precedes existence. So the example that Sartre uses in his lecture is that of a craftsman making a paper knife. When the craftsman goes to make the paper knife, he obviously has an idea for what the function or essence of what this knife will be. Its purpose is preordained. The essence of the knife precedes its existence. It wouldn't make sense to make the knife without it having a set purpose beforehand. So, to bring it back to existence precedes essence, specifically in relation to that of the human experience, we can view it through the lens that our existence, being born, precedes our essence, or what the meaning of our life will be. This falls in line neatly with some of the core tenets of existential philosophy. These tenets include an emphasis on personal freedom, individual responsibility, and deliberate choice being essential to the pursuit of self-discovery and finding one's own meaning of life. Here's a quote from Sartre's Existentialism is a Humanism that sums it up well. Quote, "What do we mean by saying that existence precedes essence? We mean that man first of all exists, encounters himself, surges up in the world, and defines himself afterwards." End quote. So that provides a solid foundation for existentialist thought. It's up to each individual to determine their own meaning for life. Camus, however, thinks there's an even more important primary question, the question of suicide when facing an absurd universe. Camus argues that this is the fundamental question of all philosophy and that it begs an answer before you can move on to anything else. But how and why does he get here? First, I want to unpack what exactly he means when he says that we're facing an absurd universe, and why his first thought is suicide or not. When you take a step back and look at the world, at life, existence itself is pretty absurd. We're sitting or standing or walking or whatever on a large rock that's really an ultra tiny rock if you zoom out enough in scale, hurtling through mostly emptiness at an unbelievably fast speed around a blazing ball of gas that provides us with light and heat that will eventually in billions of years explode and obliterate every fraction of human experience that we've ever known. And yet you're listening to a 15-minute podcast, maybe on the way to your 9-to-5 job. And also, on top of that, it's up to you to determine whether any of this means anything at all to you. It's a lot, and when you put it in those terms, it's easy to see how it can become absurd. Taking all that into consideration, I want to turn to a personal favorite work of mine from Camus, The Myth of Sisyphus, and share a quote that sums up this position nicely. Quote, "Man stands face to face with the irrational. He feels within him his longing for happiness and for reason. The absurd is born of this confrontation between the human need and the unreasonable silence of the world." End quote. To Camus, the absurd emerges because we are desperate to find a reason for life, a meaning behind it all, and the universe is simply never going to answer. This is how he gets to the question of suicide. When faced with the absurdity of the universe, one solution would be to simply decide to not face it, to turn away from the absurd once and for all. Camus argues, though, that this isn't really a solution. This doesn't actually fix the problem. Another quote from The Myth of Sisyphus says, quote, "A man devoid of hope and conscious of being so has ceased to belong to the future," end quote. Camus argues that it's important to continue in the face of that absurdity. In fact, he would argue that's the only solution to the problem. The actual Greek myth of Sisyphus that Camus titles his book after is the tale of, well, Sisyphus. There are a couple of stories for how Sisyphus earns his punishment from the gods, but his punishment is the important part. According to the myth, Sisyphus is condemned to roll a rock up to the top of a mountain, only to have the rock roll all the way to the bottom every time he reaches the top. Camus draws this as a comparison to life. We go through each day, doing whatever labors it might be, only for the rock, or the day, to start back over on the morrow. But rather than despair at this, Camus argues that we should embrace it. Quote, "The struggle itself towards the heights is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy." End quote. For Camus, the struggle to find meaning in life is the meaning of life. It's worth it in and of itself. It has to be. At the same time, this can be a bit of a lonely revelation. It's up to you, and you alone, to derive your own meaning. You can't find it from outside sources, and no one else will be able to share in your own personal meaning for life. That's not inherently a bad thing, it simply is. So that's a rough crash course on some basics of existentialist thought, and when we get back, I'll spend the last few minutes of this episode tying things back to our grumpy pal, Wolverine.
Hi, my name is Negan.
And I'm Bree. Enjoying this show on the Aspect Network?
Then check out Viltrumikes, an Invincible podcast.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series and review new episodes as they release right on Amazon Prime.
Join us as we travel space, time, and the multiverse with Mark Grayson and discuss one of the most exciting superhero series on TV on Viltrumikes, here on the Aspect Network.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. Hopefully by now you can see some of the thematic ties that Wolverine as a character has to existentialism. For starters, despite his less than stellar past, Wolverine consistently makes choices to not let that define his future. Has he done things he regrets? Absolutely. But he always has a choice about where to go from the present and what that means for his future. This is core to the existentialist idea of individual freedom and shaping oneself. Logan's journey is also marked by a constant push and pull in discovering his true self and what his true purpose is. Many times throughout his history, he can't even fully rely on his own memories, which radically throws his view of self-identity into question. Despite this, he presses on. He seeks improvement, even if he doesn't always fully believe he can achieve it. He's incredibly self-aware of his mistakes, he's made enough of them, but he uses that knowledge to continuously build on his character in an attempt to be better. Logan is also facing the absurd in a very real way. If our regular human existence is absurd already, it's taken to the nth degree by being a mutant in the Marvel Comics universe, and then taken to an even further level by having an extended life like Logan does. He's pushed that boulder up the hill more times and through more tumultuous circumstances than we can imagine, and yet he still pushes on. He does it again and again and again, because at the end of the day, the alternative is defeat, and that's not enough. Wolverine is often viewed as a lone wolf. I started this very episode describing him as such. Isolationism and disconnection are prominent themes of existentialism, and Logan feels that innately due to his prolonged life and his moral ambiguity when compared to his contemporaries. He struggles greatly fitting in amongst the X-Men, and even connecting with his own family. But again, just as he continues to roll the boulder up the hill, he always comes back to those who care about him and who he, in turn, cares about deeply. He finds part of his purpose in life in the desire to care for and to love those closest to him. It gives him meaning in spite of facing down the absurd. So that's Wolverine and existentialism. I hope you learned something and that your interest was piqued. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Philosophy of X, and be sure to bring your metal detectors as next week we tackle the master of magnetism, Magneto. You can find me online at APBatman with two T's, and please be sure to subscribe here on The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts can be found. Please give us a like, leave a comment, and turn on that notification bell so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Twitter/X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.